Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Three things happened to me when I was 17 that caused me to have a lifetime interest in communications. First, I read a book about the Dalai Lama, and he became a hero. Second, I learned my father was gay. And third, I died.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. Nick Morgan is an expert in one of the things that Americans fear the most, public speaking. Sometimes you hear people say things like, I'd rather die than have to stand up in front of an audience and give a presentation. Well, Morgan knows how to do it. He's the president of the consulting firm Public Words, and he teaches business executives and employees how to communicate better. He's also written about the topic for the Harvard Business Review, and he says part of doing a good job is knowing what doesn't work. So let's go back and hear the story that he just started to tell us and have him tell us again, but this time like this.
First, let me tell you a little bit about myself. Again, my name is Nick Morgan. I'm a writer. I'm an author. I'm a speaker. I'm passionate about communication. So I love to talk about communications, and that's really the theme of these stories that I'm going
to
tell you.
You hear speeches like this all the time. They are so boring and painful, and you just start zoning them out until...
Well, actually, I wasn't quite 17 because my birthday comes at the end of the year, so I was probably 16.
You are checked out. So here's how Morgan says not to start.
There are three ways you can start that are deadly. So one of the things people do is they start by saying, let me tell you what I'm going to talk about. And that is an old rule. Tell them what you're going to say, say it, and then tell them what you said. That came from World War II when they were trying to instruct the brass on how to give out war instructions, how to tell the sergeants and the privates what to do. But we tune out immediately. As soon as you put up an agenda slide, we tune out. So don't do that. Don't start with that. Another is to start with what's called throat clearing. And so you stand up and say, hey, it's really great to be here. And, oh, I see Jim's there in the audience. And wasn't it funny when we spilled coffee on each other's ties last night? And you just sort of babble for a while. And what you're trying to do is get comfortable there to establish a connection with the audience, but you're missing out on that prime opening moment. And then the third and the worst possible way to start is a classic that I hear every single day in conferences and speeches around the world as people introduce themselves. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. And unfortunately, audiences don't care about you, the speaker. What they care about is their own problems.
And if you want to hear the rest of Morgan's personal story, we'll have that for you at the end of the podcast. Morgan says in order to tell a good story, you have to understand why you're so scared to speak in the first place.
They care about hearing a story that connects with them. So instead of doing any one of those three things, just launch into your story. Walk out there and say, I was near death in 1925 when this happened, right? And you got my attention. Good stories are hard to tell. You typically have to tell embarrassing things about yourself if you're going to tell a personal story, because you have to go deep into something that's emotional, something that we care about. So that usually means telling about a mistake or an issue you had, a struggle you had. And when we stand up in front of other people, unfortunately, we just want to tell them how great we are. And the other reason is much more primitive than that. There's something ancient hardwired in us that when we stand up in front of other people, we feel exposed and we get this fight or flight syndrome going. We get lots and lots of adrenaline coursing through our system that makes our heart beat fast, makes our palms clammy, makes our brain race, makes us start thinking about disaster scenarios. All those things are very uncomfortable. And so until you learn to cope with those symptoms of adrenaline, then the act of public speaking is going to be painful.
Why is storytelling so important?
Because as neuroscientists will tell us, we can only remember 5 plus or minus 2 things at a time. If we hear the information you tell us about as a list or as information, in fact, our ability to retain it, to remember it, is very, very poor. If, on the other hand, you tell us a story, that appeals to a different part of our brain. It goes deep into memory and emotion, the hippocampus and the amygdala and all those cool parts of the brain. And we remember those things vividly. So you have to tell stories if you want to be remembered.
Are there certain categories that all stories that are successful fall into?
Yes. And this is one of my favorite subjects because it's a parlor game I play with people. I say there are only 5 basic stories that you should be telling. The quest story is the most basic and one of the 5. The other 4 are Stranger in a Strange Land, Revenge, rags to riches, and love story. And I always challenge people to come up with a sixth, that nobody ever has. And so if you can tell one, if you can tap into one of these basic stories, then you will powerfully connect with people. And each one of them has a deeper message. So the deeper message, for example, the quest, is that hard work pays off. And the whole essence of a quest is the journey along the way. It's the ups and downs. It's the trials and tribulations you experience as you go through that quest. It's not actually about getting to the goal. That's the very end of the story. The heart of the story is the hardships along the way. And counterintuitively, we invest more in a quest the harder it is that we think it's going to be to get there. So the CEO stands up in front of his young startup company and says, this is going to be easy, we just need to do a little work for a while and we're going to bring out this great product, is not going to get his employees enthusiastically invested in the journey. But the CEO stands up and says, look, this is going to be really hard. We're going to have to work horrific hours. It's going to take everything we have. It's going to take our most brilliant efforts. We're going to have to reinvent the wheel many times over here. If we don't get this right, it's not going to happen. It's up to us, but the result is so cool, it's going to be so worthwhile, that if we do it, we are going to change the world. That's the person who'll get, in telling a quest story, get his team fully engaged.
Could we be getting to a point where we're getting a little storied out? I mean, if you look at all the different venues that are out there to hear stories, whether it's going to a conference or TED Talks or Moth Stories, is there a moment where you just give me the facts, I don't want a full story?
I would guess I'd have to say, yes, there are moments like that. But on the whole, there is no sign that humanity is ever going to get enough stories. And we're suddenly going to say, yeah, just give me a boring list, please. One of the things that continues to amaze me is we talk all the time about how we live in a information-saturated age. Everybody has ADD. We're all overloaded. And yet, what do we do on the weekends? We sit down and binge on House of Cards and Game of Thrones. So the human mind just embraces stories. It always has, always will.
So what's the best way to prepare for giving a public speech or addressing a group of people?
It's really two things. It's, first of all, putting the time in to create a good speech, so one you feel strongly about, you feel passionate about, you feel like this is worth delivering. I always say the only reason to give a speech is to change the world, so make sure you're changing the world, even if it's in a small way. And then the second thing to do is to prepare your mind emotionally, so know yourself, investigate yourself, and figure out what are the triggers, what are the emotional triggers that are going to make me frightened or make me less clear or make me do something like wave my hands around hysterically or get what we call happy feet. Once you know yourself, you know what those triggers are. You know what's going to trip you up and start to work on those.
I imagine that if you were giving a big presentation before a large group of people that these would be good steps to take. But should you take some of this advice even when you're having a meeting with your staff or maybe you're making a presentation to a bunch of your coworkers and say there's just 20 people there or something?
Well, what I coach people to do in that kind of situation is, yeah, I mean, I'm a realist. You're not going to put in the amount of work you're going to do if you're speaking at a keynote level and you've got 5,000 people staring at you. Obviously, you're going to put the time in there. But it's also important to put the time in for those kind of meetings because meetings have a really bad name, and we all know the reason why. They're boring because people don't put enough energy in them. So what I tell people to do is just 5 minutes before the meeting, sit down and do the following exercise. Think about what's the emotion you want to convey to the people in that meeting. Are you excited about the topic? Are you angry about something that's wrong? Are you impatient with the progress that's being made? What's the emotion? Focus on that emotion. Maybe remember a time when you felt that emotion naturally and strongly. Put everything else out of your mind. Learn to focus on the emotion. When you walk in the meeting, then you will be focused and emotionally more powerful than you would be if you walked in the way most people do normally, which is just with their to-do list in their head.
A lot of people say, hey, look, I'm just not good at giving public speeches, that some people are really good at it and they should do it, and I know what my skills are, and that's not something that I excel at. Is that an accurate way of looking at it? Can everyone learn how to give a good presentation?
Absolutely. Everybody can learn to be better. It is hard work. Let's not kid ourselves. It takes practice. It's an unnatural act. It's not something you're born being able to do. There are people who are naturally more extroverted and love the attention, love the audience's eyes on them. So for them, it's easier to learn. There's this range of human abilities. But everybody can learn to do it. And so it's worth everybody learning to get good at it, to get decent at it. Not all of us are going to be a President Clinton or you pick your favorite speaker. But we can all learn to do better.
Nick Morgan, thank you very much.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Nick Morgan is the author of Power Cues and is the president of Public Words. What about you? What's your biggest fear at work? Is it public speaking? Maybe it's just speaking at all and telling your boss what you think. Whatever it is, we'd love to know. It might be the next topic that we tackle with the researchers and authors at the Harvard Business Review. Together, we're trying to explain the culture of work and find answers to the problems that we all face so that we can make work a better place. Send an email to moneytalking@wnyc. And don't forget to sign up for our podcast. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC. But wait, are you still wondering what happened to Morgan when he was 17? Still hooked? You want to hear the rest of the story? Here's Nick Morgan.
So I had a chance to see the Dalai Lama a few years later. And when he began his speech, he didn't say anything. He just looked at us. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes of stage time. And yet something extraordinary happened in that silence that rarely happens with a speaker, and that I felt I was touched in some way. And other people in the audience told me afterwards they felt the same thing, and I wanted to know, what was that? What was that extraordinary communication the Dalai Lama was able to manage in those moments of silence? Back to age 17, I have to buy a present for my dad. I chanced to get him a novel about homosexuality, and when he opened it, he gave me a funny look, and gears turned in my head at that moment. And in that funny look, I suddenly realized, oh my God, my dad is gay. And it wasn't until years later that he came out to me and he said, how did you know? When I told him, I already know, Dad, you're gay. And I said, that look you gave me at Christmas 10 years ago, of course, he had no memory of it. And I said to myself, what is it that's so powerful about a look that a lifetime of secrecy can be revealed in it? Back to age 17, I'm tobogganing with friends. I don't make it around the curve. It was a very icy slope and a cold day, and I fracture my skull and I go into a coma. And during that coma, I flatlined briefly for about 15 minutes. And when I woke back up, they gave me a bunch of tests to see if I was still okay. But they didn't test for something that I couldn't articulate, but that had happened to me perhaps because of the accident, and that was that I could no longer tell what people were thinking. We can all look at the people we know and immediately intuit if they're angry. We're familiar with their body language signals, with the way they stand or the way they cross their arms or the frown on their face. I couldn't tell that anymore. I had to rebuild that ability, and it took me months to relearn how it is that people radiate their intent through body language. And so I became very conscious of it. For the rest of my life, it's been a study of mine.